Ever get curious about like the hidden architecture of code? You know, like how data is arranged in a computer's memory? Well, that's what we're diving into today, data layout and programming, and why it really matters for a program's efficiency.
It's kind of like if you think about organizing a kitchen, right?
Okay.
A chef can't just toss ingredients wherever.
Right.
Where you put things impacts how fast you can cook, right?
Mm.
Data layout is like that, but for the instructions computers use.
That's a great analogy. And we're lucky enough to have two really cutting-edge academic papers as our guide today. The first one dives into a language called SECX, semi-axiomatic sequent calculus.
Yeah.
It's a formal name if you want to get technical.
Yeah, and SSX is built on this fascinating idea of shared memory concurrency, which we'll unpack in a bit.
Okay.
But essentially, it's a way for different parts of a program to communicate with each other.
Gotcha.
The second paper introduces SNX, which builds on SSX and gives programmers even more control over how data is laid out, how it's organized.
It's like SX gives you the kitchen, but SNX lets you customize the countertop, the pantry, everything for maximum cooking speed. I like that.
Exactly.
So our mission, if you choose to accept it, listener, is to go from this theoretical foundation of logic, which can seem very abstract, to the practical implications of how data gets organized in memory and why that matters.
Absolutely. And a key to understanding their whole world is the Curry-Howard isomorphism.
Whoa, okay.
It sounds intimidating, but it's a really elegant concept. It connects logic and programming in a surprising way.
It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, honestly. Curry-Howard isomorphism. Can you demystify it for us a little bit?
Absolutely. At its core, the Curry-Howard isomorphism suggests that computer programs are like proofs in a logical system.
Okay.
So instead of writing code, imagine constructing a logical argument step by step. And that argument, when translated, becomes the program.
So if our logic is sound, our program runs flawlessly. Mm. Is that what makes these languages, SX and SNX, so reliable?
That's a big part of it, for sure. What's even more mind-blowing is that different types of logic, different ways of structuring an argument, lead to different programming styles.
Mm.
Just like there are different ways to structure an argument, there are different ways to structure a program. Mm-hmm. This is where SX and SNAX come in. They embody this connection between logic and code.
Okay, so let's put this in the context of SAX. The paper mentions a shared memory concurrency model, and I'm already a little lost. What does that mean in simpler terms?
Okay, so imagine our program is a team working on a project, right?
Huh.
And they've got this giant whiteboard that everyone on the team can access and write on.
Okay.
That whiteboard is our shared memory. Each team member can read or write information on that whiteboard, which represents the data in our program.
So instead of each team member having their own separate notes, they all collaborate on this one big board.
Exactly. And because multiple people can access the board at the same time, read and write simultaneously, we get concurrency. Different parts of the program can execute at the same time, like different team members working on different parts of the project, which really speeds things up.
That makes sense. But how do specific instructions in SX, the actual code, how do those translate to actions on this shared memory whiteboard?
Think of each instruction as a specific action on that whiteboard.
Okay.
For instance, the cut operation is like allocating a new section on the board, essentially creating a new memory cell to store some information.
Okay.
Identity is like copying information from one part of the board to another.
So copying notes between sections, I can see how that would be useful.
Exactly. And then we have write rules and left rules. Write rules are like writing new information on the board, while left rules are like reading existing information. It's a constant dance of reading and writing, all happening concurrently on this shared space.
Wow, so it's like a carefully coordinated ballet of information flow on this memory whiteboard. The paper gives an example of a SAX program that swaps elements in a pair, like AB becomes BA.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through how that actually plays out on our imaginary whiteboard?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's say our whiteboard has a section labeled X containing the pair AB. To swap these elements, the program first allocates two new sections. Let's call them Y and Z.
Okay.
Then it reads the pair AB from section X.
Okay, so we've read the data. What happens next? How do we actually swap A and B?
This is where it gets cool. The program writes B to section Y and A to section Z, so now they're reversed. Finally, it writes the new pair, B, to the original X section, overwriting what was there before. It's like rearranging things on the whiteboard to achieve that swapped outcome.
It's fascinating how these abstract logical instructions become concrete actions on the shared memory. So we've got a good grasp on SX and its shared memory model. Now, how does SNX build upon this to give us even more control? What's so special about this eligibility concept we see in the ESTA-X paper?
So eligibility, huh? Imagine like being able to divide our whiteboard into these specialized zones.
Okay.
Each one is designated for a specific type of data. That's essentially what ESTA-X does with eligibility.
Okay.
It brings a whole new level of organization to the table. And it works like hand in hand with this concept called address projections.
So instead of just having one big shared space,
yeah,
ESTA-X lets us create like designated areas for different types of information.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like having a zone for ingredients, another for utensils, and another for finished dishes in our kitchen.
You got it. And this kind of organization, it isn't just about tidiness, you know. It has a real impact on efficiency, on speed. When the data is all laid out strategically, it minimizes the time the program spends searching for what it needs. It's like having all the spices grouped together in labeled jars.
Right.
Much faster than just rummaging through a jumbled mess.
Absolutely. So it's all about streamlining how the program accesses those related pieces of information. Now, what about those situations where we're dealing with, well, nothing? The paper mentioned a unit type, and it honestly sounds kind of zen to me.
Yeah, the unit type, right. It's fascinating. It represents, like, the concept of nothingness in a very concrete way.
Okay.
In SNA, it's denoted as just one. And get this, it takes up no space in memory.
Wait, hold on. Something that represents nothing actually exists in the computer's memory. I always thought everything digital had to take up at least a little bit of space.
You'd think so, right. But the unit type is more about like signaling the absence of information rather than storing something concrete. It's like a blank space on our whiteboard. It might seem insignificant, but it can play a crucial role in certain computations.
Okay, I think I'm starting to wrap my head around that. Huh? So we've got pairs, you know, neatly laid out side by side. And we've acknowledged the void with the unit type. What about more complex data structures, like those tagged unions the paper mentioned?
Oh, yeah. Tagged unions, they're like containers that can hold different types of data. But there's a clever twist with how ESTA-X handles them.
Okay.
In ESTA-X, the tag, which tells us what type of data is inside, is stored right next to the data itself.
So it's like labeling our containers clearly so we don't have to open each one to see what's inside.
Precisely.
Smart.
Yeah.
But what happens when we need more flexibility? It can't always be as straightforward as pairs or tagged unions, right?
You're absolutely right. Data can get messy. That's where the downshift type comes in. It's denoted by A.
Okay.
And this is where pointers make a comeback, but in a controlled way. Think of them like shortcuts on our whiteboard. Instead of writing the same information in multiple places, we can simply point to where it's already stored.
So downshift adds a layer of indirection, allowing us to create more like dynamic relationships between different pieces of data. It's like drawing arrows between sections on our whiteboard to show connections.
Exactly.
That's really neat.
It is. And it highlights how ESTA-X strikes a balance for a balance between structure and flexibility. Now, remember how we talked about that pair swapping example in SX?
Yeah.
Let's revisit that and see how ESTA-X's approach is different.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how those flat layouts and address projections actually play out in a real example.
Okay, so with ESTA-X, we had to allocate those temporary sections on our whiteboard, Y and Z, just to do the swap.
Right.
But ESTA-X simplifies things beautifully.
Really? So we don't need those temporary sections anymore?
Nope. Because ESTA-X lets us store pairs together directly, we can just swap elements within the existing pair. We don't have to jump through hoops. It's much cleaner, much more efficient.
This is really clicking for me. We've talked about these abstract concepts, flat layouts, downshift, and now I'm seeing how they translate to actual code optimizations. It's like comparing a well-organized kitchen to one where everything is just in disarray.
And just like in a well-organized kitchen, that efficient data layout, it can significantly speed up program execution. It's all about minimizing the time spent searching and shuffling data around.
Speaking of efficiency, I'm reminded of that linked list example from the ESTA-X paper, the one about mapping a function over a list of Booleans. I have a feeling this will be a great way to see all these ESTA-X features in action.
Oh, it's the perfect example. Imagine our linked list of Booleans as like a chain of index cards.
Okay.
Each one contains either true or false, along with a pointer to the next card in the chain.
So it's like a chain of instructions, each one saying either yes or no, and then pointing to the next instruction.
Precisely. And our goal is to apply a function to each of these Booleans, essentially transforming each instruction based on some predefined rule. Now, in ESTA-X, we would have needed to allocate new memory cells for each transformed Boolean and then link them all together to form a new list.
It seems like that would involve a lot of back and forth with the shared memory.
Mm-hmm.
Reading a Boolean, applying the function, writing the new Boolean, linking it.
Yeah.
There must be a more streamlined approach using SNX.
You're telling me. And that's where SNX shines. Remember those flat layouts we talked about?
Yeah.
By strategically using downshift, SNX lets us create a link list where each Boolean and its corresponding pointer are stored right next to each other.
Ah, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
So instead of having to jump around in memory to access the Boolean and his pointer, SNX keeps them together like buddies.
Exactly.
Making the whole process much faster.
You got it. It's like having the instruction and the address of the next instruction all written on the same index card.
Right.
No need to flip through the whole stack to find what you need.
This really makes me appreciate how much thought goes into designing these languages, even at this very granular level of data organization.
Yeah.
It's amazing how such subtle design choices can have such a significant impact on a program's performance.
It really is a testament to the power of careful design and optimization.
For sure.
But there's another critical aspect we need to discuss, and that's type safety.
Okay.
Both SAX and SNX are designed with a strong emphasis on ensuring that programs behave predictably and reliably. They've got to be trustworthy, right?
Type safety. That sounds intriguing and crucial. Can you elaborate on what that means in the context of these languages?
Imagine type safety as like a set of guardrails that prevent our programs from veering off course.
Okay.
It ensures that the data is used consistently and that operations are performed on the correct types of data. Like, we don't want to mix apples and oranges when the recipe calls for just apples, right?
So it's like having a built-in mechanism that prevents us from trying to, I don't know, use a whisk where we need a spatula.
Mm-hmm.
Or from mixing ingredients that just don't belong together.
Exactly. Type safety is all about preventing those kinds of mismatches that can lead to errors. It's like having a vigilant sous chef who double checks everything to ensure that the recipe is followed to the letter.
That sounds incredibly helpful, especially when dealing with complex programs where it's so easy to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that SNX and SAX like completely eliminate the possibility of errors in our code?
Well, I wish it were that easy. While no language can completely eliminate the possibility of all errors, type safety acts as a really powerful safety net.
Okay.
It catches a whole class of potential errors before they can even cause problems during execution.
So it's like having a safety harness when rock climbing. It won't prevent you from making a wrong step, but it will catch you if you do.
Perfect analogy. And this safety net, it comes in the form of two key properties, preservation and progress.
Okay.
Preservation ensures that the type of data remains consistent throughout the program's execution.
So it's like making sure our ingredients don't magically transform into something else in the middle of cooking.
Exactly. Can you imagine the chaos? And then there's progress.
All right. And what role does progress play in this safety net?
Progress guarantees that a well-typed program will either finish its computation, you know, serve up that delicious final dish, or it'll continue making progress toward a solution. It prevents our program from getting stuck in an infinite loop.
So no more endlessly stirring the pot with no hope of a meal.
Exactly. We've got to keep things moving.
That makes perfect sense. It's like ensuring that our program is always moving forward in a meaningful way. So type safety is about making our programs more reliable, less prone to those frustrating crashes and unexpected behaviors.
Precisely. It gives programmers that confidence in their code and helps to create a more robust and predictable computing environment, which is what we all want.
This deep dive has been absolutely fascinating. We've gone from understanding the importance of data layout to exploring the intricacies of shared memory concurrency and the elegance of SNAX's approach to data organization.
We've seen how SNX, with its concept of eligibility and address projections, offers a more fine-grained control over data layout than its predecessor, SAX, right?
Yeah.
Leading to those potential efficiency gains, especially in tasks like manipulating linked data structures.
And we've delved into the crucial role of type safety, ensuring that our programs behave as expected and don't go haywire. But here's where it gets even more interesting, right? We've been like totally laser focused on this idea of shared memory,
mm-hmm.
right? With everyone on our programming team collaborating on that central whiteboard.
Right.
But what about other ways to organize things?
Right.
What about message passing, where processes communicate by sending like messages back and forth instead of sharing memory directly?
Oh, that's a fascinating idea. It's like shifting from a single kitchen to like a whole network of kitchens, you know?
Okay.
Each with its own set of ingredients and specialized chefs who communicate by sending dishes back and forth.
So instead of everyone crowding around the same whiteboard, we've got chefs sending messages like, I need more flour, or hey, the souffle is ready.
Exactly.
It seems like this message-passing model would be a natural fit for distributed systems, where processes might be running on completely different machines, like chefs scattered across the globe.
Absolutely. Imagine like coordinating a banquet across multiple restaurants, each specializing in a particular cuisine.
Right.
They wouldn't be sharing a physical kitchen, but they could still work together seamlessly by sending messages, right? About what they're preparing, when to expect deliveries.
Right.
This kind of distributed approach, it offers incredible flexibility, fault tolerance. You know, if one kitchen goes down, the others can pick up the slack and scalability essential qualities for like handling those massive data sets or really complex computations that just can't be contained on a single machine.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly powerful, but I imagine it also introduces a whole new set of challenges, right?
Oh, absolutely.
With SNAX and its shared memory model, we had that central whiteboard and those really clear rules about how to organize the data. How do we even begin to design a language that combines the precision of SNAX's data layout control with the flexibility and power of message passing?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's not just about tweaking the whiteboard, you know?
Right.
It's about rethinking the entire architecture of our computational kitchen. Remember that mind-bending Curry-Howard isomorphism we talked about earlier?
Right.
It suggests that we need to look for new formulations of logic, like new blueprints, if you will, to create a language that can handle both, you know, that can elegantly express both the structured organization of data and those dynamic communication patterns of message passing.
It's like designing a system that can handle both the precise arrangement of ingredients within each kitchen.
Yeah.
The intricate choreography of dishes moving between kitchens, all to create that perfect symphony of flavors.
Exactly. It's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
That pushes the boundaries of programming language design. It requires us to find a way to bridge those two worlds, the world of structured data and the world of distributed communication.
Well, this deep dive has been a wild ride.
It has.
We've gone from rearranging sticky notes on a whiteboard to envisioning this global network of computational kitchens, all thanks to the fascinating and often overlooked world of data layout.
And it really just highlights how these seemingly abstract concepts from, you know, logic and type theory, they actually have profound implications for how we design, how we write, and how we optimize the code that powers our digital world.
Absolutely. So for our listener out there, we'll leave you with this final thought to ponder. Could this quest to combine precise data control with the power of distributed communication, could this lead to entirely new forms of computation? Could it be the key to unlocking solutions to problems we haven't even encountered yet? It's a tantalizing question, and one that might just reshape the future of programming. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into data layout and beyond. Until next time.